Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And hello to everyone, wherever you may be, in the United States, overseas, serving on our many military installations around the world. Or if you're vacationing and visiting some other part of the world, you can hear us simply by going to radioamerica.org and linking to the live cast. So we want you to listen to us wherever you might be, because wherever you might be, the importance of knowing how to handle your dollars is going to work to your benefit. Keep money in your pocket that belongs there. And our show is designed for home, for family, for finance, for your future, all about information that you need to know about. Sometimes you don't know where to go. You know, you say, look, I don't know as much as I need to know about that. Well, that's what this show is about, to provide you with those answers and do it in such a way that you can relax and be easy with it and learn a thing or two. And, of course, you're always welcome to make contact with us here at Radio America at Home and Family Finance. And I'll tell you later about my address where you can reach out to us, okay? So today I'm reaching out to a wonderful person who's been here several times. She is a corporate responsibility leader at PricewaterhouseCoopers. That means she's got to be either a vice president or a president or whatever, but for our purposes, Shannon Schuyler is a delightful person to talk to about a program. Let me go back a little bit and tell you that the President's Advisory Council on Financial Capability for Young Americans released its final report in July, and the President and Secretary of the Treasury regarding recommended approaches to improving financial knowledge and skills among young Americans, your children, my children, our children. As part of this report, the council noted specific partnerships between the private sector, specifically PricewaterhouseCoopers' support of Digital Promise, and Shannon will tell us what that is, which develops a pilot to test whether teachers who become more comfortable and confident with personal finance topics and effective teaching strategies will be better equipped to teach these concepts. Simply put, folks, you can't teach what you don't know. And so the idea is to make sure that teachers, just like us, everyday people who have the responsibility of teaching our young people, know what they're talking about. It's very simple. The pilot will provide access to tools powered by digital technologies to improve teacher motivation, confidence, and skills. And, of course, Shannon and PricewaterhouseCoopers, they've been an integral part of this program, and I'm delighted now to welcome you to the program. Shannon, nice to have you with us again.
Oh, it's always wonderful to be here. Thank you so much.
You know what I like about PricewaterhouseCoopers? You put your money where your mouth is. You put your money where you believe in. And tell us, how much have you put into this program so far in the support of this financial education of young people?
Sure. Well, we initially started in 2012 with a commitment of $160 million. And this past year, we added another $30 million. To it. So we have now $190 million commitment. And what we just keep finding is that there's other things we can do. There's other partners that we can work with, really, to make what we're doing more robust. And so we get more and more excited about what we really can put our money towards. And so now really looking at teachers and looking at technology are two fundamental things that we just feel the more we can invest in, the better off we really have a way to have people have more upward mobility opportunities.
Folks, if you wonder why PricewaterhouseCoopers is on this program, if you wonder why we turn back to Shannon, if you wonder why we think there are people that you ought to listen to and follow as an example, and I say that they don't, but I do, it's because we're talking about $190 million dedicated to making this a stronger America by educating our young people. Thank you for that. Let's talk about the program and what the Digital Promise. And how that works. What is the Digital Promise? Explain to us what we're talking about here.
Absolutely. So one of the things, and you mentioned, that came out of the report was really needing to go in to teach the teachers and finding more innovative ways to take teachers, especially in that third grade, sixth grade actually, to ninth grade, and really help them to understand how to be able to teach financial capability. And not teachers who are already engaged in math and those type of courses, but ones who might not have that type of exposure. And so how can we really leverage technology and that same type of thing that we do with students around badging or micro credentialing. And so really to have them be able to take different types of courses online to really beef up their knowledge around financial literacy and to test this whole hypothesis, if in fact they're given the tools to understand financial literacy and concept more for themselves, will that also help them to be better teachers of it within the classroom? And is it really that the more comfortable they are with the materials, the more they'll want to teach it? And so really trying to figure out how can we invest in teacher education in ways that haven't been done before, and to see how that will really motivate teachers then to come up with their own innovative solutions to really drive more learning around finances in the classroom.
So the pilot here is providing access for teachers to understand the digital technologies that are out there so that they can become more efficient in terms of teaching.
Absolutely. And the other thing that it does, it really gives teachers the opportunity to gain recognition for their competencies and their personal finance training and their skills. Because one thing we've learned is that teachers learn best when they can teach other teachers. And so we wanted to make sure that we were really highlighting and elevating teachers who are learning and who find different ways and grasp the knowledge in a way that they can also then pass along to their peers. And we're finding that that really will then allow more and more and more teachers to have the skills necessary to be able to teach this in the broadest way possible.
Fascinating. And when I come back, I'll ask you how broad-based is this program right now. We know $190 million is a lot of money. How many people are you actually affecting? My guest, Shannon Skyler from PricewaterhouseCoopers. We're talking about ways to teach your children, at first by teaching the teachers. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on Radio America. Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back with more.
Want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about, or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And thanks so much for being with me. Look, I'm not going to put on any financial airs here. I was just about as stupid as you could be, as dumb when it came to financial literacy, because I didn't learn it. And I didn't learn it in school, and probably you didn't either, because the teachers didn't know any more than we knew. That's long ago, and now they're trying to change that. You know, we just didn't learn about things. Right now we're graduating people still from high school, folks, who can't balance their checkbooks. It's just not – and it's the only thing that we can be sure of. That young people, we know we can guess about all the things that they may one day be, but we know they're going to be consumers. They are consumers, and yet we don't demand that they graduate with flying colors in terms of being smart, educated, and involved consumers. But PricewaterhouseCoopers cares about that. $190 million worth of care. Shannon Skyler is my guest. She's one of the responsibility leaders in a program that's designed to educate the teachers so that the teachers can teach. And at that point, we start a process where we're really learning how to be good consumers. Shannon, how widespread is the program right now?
It's interesting. Earn Your Future, over the last several years now, we have spent 700,000 hours of time teaching within classrooms, helping teachers. And we've reached about 1.5 million teachers and another, or 1.5 million students, another about 40 to 50,000 teachers.
Wow.
And so it is incredibly widespread. I mean, it's one of the broadest commitments that's made out there by a corporation. And what we're trying to do is leverage the fact that we're in across the country with over 90 offices. And interestingly enough, it is also being picked up a lot overseas. And so we have it translated into several different languages and have found out that certainly not being financially literate is not just a U.S. issue, but it's one that other countries really suffer from. And so really, to your point, this is something that a student, when they learn it, they carry it with them for life.
Absolutely.
And if they don't learn it, they also carry it with them for life. And unfortunately, then that doesn't help them as they're looking to progress and really to prosper.
Yeah, and let's face it. My parents didn't teach me for a variety of reasons, but one of them was that they didn't know. They just didn't really. They were working class, working hard. They didn't have time to sit down and say, here are the things that you should know. So the only place that I could learn, and I think that's the case for lots of thousands of others, if not hundreds of thousands, is that they could learn it in school. And if the school doesn't teach it, then you go through your young years growing up, becoming an adult, and you just are as ignorant as your parents and their parents. And it can change. It has to change, doesn't it?
No, it absolutely does. And really now with what schools are like, really leveraging technology in the classroom to be able to pull different types of content that makes sense for that individual classroom and for that teacher, and to really be able to expand financial access through technology is so critical, because as you know, we can just as easily leverage technology to be our friend as we can to make very quick, very poor decisions because of how much technology works for us and then sometimes works against us.
And I think the point that you're making here is that for those who think that technology is not good, if it's properly used and if it's understood, it can work wonders. It can really grow the dimensions of the program.
No, absolutely. And what we're really finding is that students, they want to be engaged in technology. And so we right now are going through a process of taking all of the financial literacy modules that we've developed and we're digitizing them all. And so teachers will have the ability to use it more in a blended classroom style. And so they can teach things in person and you can have PWC within the classroom. But then also either if we can't get there or to stimulate students in another way, they'll be able to access it online and really be able to look at different videos and different types of things that make it even more engaging for students. And we believe that the more chances they have to learn, the stickier that this is going to become. And when suddenly they need to know that knowledge, it will be there for them.
Yeah, I get that. And I get that this program is tremendously successful. So I'm going to assume, I'm assuming that other companies like PWC or on that nature are just rushing in to do the same thing and to join this party. Is that right?
You are completely accurate in that. We have a lot of other organizations that are looking to do the same type of thing. I've been amazed at how much people want to partner together. The collaborations that have come out of this, corporates to corporates, academics, really bringing them into the fold, nonprofits. It's really been something that has united groups across industries to say, together, we could actually help to solve this issue. And the insights that you get from really that cross-sector collaboration has been incredibly exciting and has led to some really innovative solutions.
This is wonderful stuff. My guest is Shannon Schuyler from PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers. They're talking about a program. It's now being studied and looked at through the President's Financial Committee, and it's a wonderful way that we can increase the knowledge of our children's financial capabilities in school. When we come back, we'll talk about the other commitments that PwC is making in this, and more than just money. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry. Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network, and we thank our sponsors, the Defense Credit Union Council and the Credit Union National Association. We thank them for their continued support of the program dedicated to making all of us financially fit. You know, Defense Credit Unions have been serving, and I say that because I'm really appreciative of their sponsorship. Defense Credit Unions have been serving our U.S. military since 1928. As nonprofit financial institutions, Defense Credit Unions don't have stockholders to answer to. They just have you, our member owners. It means lower fees, better rates, and always community-based. So Defense Credit Unions understand the financial needs and challenges of a highly mobile membership. And because we are where you are, there's no need to walk outside the gates for service when you need a small dollar loan or just some real straight-up financial counseling wherever you may be based. Of course, we have all of the other standard products and services like savings and checking accounts, auto loans, ATMs, and online banking right there on your base or your post, wherever you may be, or your ship. For Department of Defense civilians, service members, retirees, National Guard, reserves, and their families, Defense Credit Unions are there for you at all stages of your active career and beyond. Defense Credit Unions, join once, member for life. Go to dcuc.org to find your nearest Defense Credit Union today. Hope you do that. And, of course, we always talk about savings. And wherever you are, whether you're in the military or not, savings is a wonderful thing for you. It pays dividends later, no pun intended. My guest, Shannon Schuyler from PricewaterhouseCoopers. We're talking about this program that's in place now that's aiding teachers to learn how to be better financial teachers, financial education teachers. You talked about the money, Shannon, which is $190 million that your company has invested. But it has to take a lot of your people, too, and you didn't mention that. You've got a lot of people working on this, a lot of folks, I guess, who volunteer as part of their corporate responsibility.
Absolutely. One of the things that we wanted was some kind of effort where our people could take their financial skills and really put it to work. In the U.S., we have about 45,000 people, and over 60% of them have spent time teaching financial literacy, which is an incredible number of people who are out there in their local schools and inner city schools really saying that we want to be a part of this and we want to figure out how it not only will help our communities, but it'll help the future talent that we work with both within PwC as well as those that are out in the general marketplace.
Yeah, that's so important that you have good people who know what they're talking about who join in. And I suspect for the folks who work at PricewaterhouseCoopers, there's got to be a pretty good feeling when you come out of a school or come out of a classroom where you know you've made a positive difference, not only in the lives of teachers, but in the lives of students.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you come out and you have students that will keep in contact with us or teachers and they send us notes or the first time the light bulb comes off when they get their first check of their part-time job and realize that money was taken out, but they knew it was going to be taken out. I mean, it's wonderful how they reach out, and our people have learned so much from it, too. It's helped them to really be able to get a group together and to make sure they're really good at developing their interpersonal skills and their training skills and really being able to explain things in a way that people can truly grasp.
Yeah, it's just great stuff. Now, let's talk about the final report. There were lots of things in it. Some I know about, some I don't. What was most impressive to you? Or what were you most impressed by?
Well, they put together a lot of different recommendations. One certainly is to simplify student aid. And so it's still very complex and confusing for students to be able to find out the best way to get additional dollars to go to higher ed. And in fact, you have a lot of students who decide not to even apply to certain schools because they don't think they can get the money. And so that's something that we certainly need to work out. They've also really said the bonus is to how do you connect youth employment opportunities to financial aid? Again, that people have an appreciation for the work that they do and how they'll be paid, because that's very tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And most students don't realize that money is taken out for different benefits, for taxes, et cetera. And what does that look like? Also really focusing on making sure that students are led to the right products for them, because unfortunately, different financial institutions, the products that they have may or may not be right for a student.
Mm-hmm.
And really trying to make sure that they eliminate that gap. And I think one that's incredibly important is really understanding the specific needs of traditionally underserved populations. So really realizing that building financial capability is critical to upward mobility.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you really address those groups in ways that they will understand more and more? And also, how do you address those groups that their families will understand? Because you have many different families living under a certain roof.
We're out of time, of course. And now, there's a lot of things we touched on. How can they reach out to find out more information? Any place they can go that you can send them to?
Well, absolutely. I think the President's Advisory Council on Financial Capabilities for Young Americans, the report is out there. It's on the treasury.gov site. So take a look at that, as well as pwc.com, and take a look at what we're doing around Earn Your Future.
Well, what you're doing is wonderful. I love you for taking time to be with us. You're always welcome. So come back when you have more to talk about. Thank you so much, Shannon.
Thanks.
You bet. Coming up next, the author of the book on retirement. The book? Stay with us, folks.
Safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
You know, in one of the ways we talked about the young people here in the early segment there with Shannon, in this segment, we're going to kind of turn our attention to the other end. That's when you're ready to retire, when you have done your best for yourself and your family, and you're retiring. Hopefully, before you got there, you did some smart things. And when it comes to your retirement and money, most financial planners will tell you all of the steps that you should be taking to make sure you are financially secure and comfortable in your golden years. But it could be the choices, decisions, and actions that you should not be making that can be the most important. That, according to financial planners Kevin Hauser and Gary Plessy, authors of quote-unquote, folks, the book on retirement. Somebody says that this is the book on retirement, I want to read it. I want to share with you. And with us today talking is one of the authors who's joining us here. Gary Plessy is a senior partner and co-founder of the Hauser & Plessy Wealth Management Group, located in Allentown, Pennsylvania. He is a certified financial planner and a certified public accountant. He leads the tax practice of the Hauser & Plessy Wealth Management Group and focuses on tax minimization and investment risk planning for clients. So you ought to know what he's talking about. In other words, you ought to listen to him. Gary, welcome to the program. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, thanks, Paul. Nice to be here.
The other part that I liked about this is everybody tells you what you should do, but you guys are saying what you should not do. So let's get started in that. What are the biggest mistakes? And I know you have six don'ts about your money in retirement that can make all the difference. So take us through.
Well, I guess let me start here. What we often see, Paul, when we talk to people as they kind of enter into retirement, what we oftentimes find is that they tend to try and follow the same things they did in what we call the first half of your financial life as they enter into the second half of their financial life. And a lot of times that just won't work, because when you look at your entire financial life, you really can kind of break it down into two halves. First half, you're saving, you're in accumulation mode, and you really have time on your side. But once you retire, the game really does change, because now, you know, now you're in a spot where now you got to try and take that money that you saved and really try and generate an income stream from it. You want to make sure that you don't outlive that income stream, and you also want to make sure, you want to make sure that if the market dips at the wrong time, you know, that you're going to be okay.
Right.
And furthermore, you know, one of the biggest things we see is people trying to get money out of their retirement accounts. And the real problem there is that when you have money in those tax-deferred accounts, none of that money's ever been taxed. So what a lot of people don't really put a lot of thought into ahead of time is say, okay, what do I do when I get to retirement to try and get that money out? I think the big thing that we've been brainwashed into doing from all the financial firms and mutual fund companies, et cetera, is, you know, stick as much as you possibly can into those tax-deferred accounts, which is a good strategy.
Okay.
However, the problem comes in retirement. You know, for example, if you say you have $1 million in an IRA account, well, you really don't have $1 million, because to make that useful functional money, well, you really have to pay taxes on that when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So what we like to really try and see is really people get into retirement with really much more of a balanced approach. And when I say balanced approach, I mean money inside of retirement accounts and some money outside of retirement accounts. And that really helps to allow us to get that money out of those retirement accounts in a much more tax-efficient way.
So you're saying diversification here is an important part of how you ought to save for retirement.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. To have some kind of a balance, you know, not only between stocks and bonds, obviously, but to have money inside and outside of retirement accounts.
Okay, but please, and I hear you, Gary, explain outside, because I think everybody's saying, okay, what should I be doing outside of the retirement? I get 401, I get, those plans, retirement, but where should I go and where is my money going to be safe?
Yep, I think that's a great question. I think a lot of times what we always press, say, okay, so you have your money, you have your normal retirement plan set up, you're putting money in your 401ks, your IRA accounts on a regular basis. Obviously, we always want to look to try and have clients build up some type of a cash reserve as step number one. And then if there's room in the budget, if they can build up some portfolio, whether it's through automatic investments or savings into mutual funds or maybe an individual stock account or build up some CD portfolio, to have some money that's going into accounts above and beyond what they're doing inside of their 401k accounts.
Okay, so all these different accounts, but should I set it up so I can get all that money out at one time?
That's another great question. When I look at kind of big picture, when people get into retirement, we always say they have two larger buckets of money. Say money outside of their retirement accounts and money inside of their retirement accounts. Reality is, the money outside of their retirement accounts, we always look at that as kind of the more conservative piece. We want to keep that more liquid, more ready access, because if they ever need money lump sum for one reason or another, that's going to be the bucket where they can touch it the most tax efficiently. Because if they would take money out of their retirement accounts lump sum, well, now that can end up throwing them into higher tax brackets. There's tax consequences, et cetera. So typically we look at the money outside of the retirement accounts as your more conservative piece, more liquid piece. The money inside the retirement accounts, your IRAs, your 401ks, okay, well, there you can have your stock and bond mutual funds. You can have the stuff that may go up and down, because reality is there, you're very likely never going to touch that money lump sum.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because for pure tax reasons, you're going to want to take that out on a more slow and steady basis.
So in the non retirement accounts, you want to plan some distributions, I guess, at certain periods of time. And do you base it on the age? Is that what you say? Okay, at age so and so, I'm going to take this out at age so and so. Is that how that should work?
Well, once people get into retirement, we have those two buckets. Let's say we have those buckets set up. We have your retirement assets and non-retirement assets. For us, when we do planning, retirement planning, it all comes down to cash flow. And it all comes down to income taxes, too, which is a big piece that a lot of people don't recognize. So what we're always trying to do is, say, squeeze the tax brackets for getting money out of those retirement accounts. So as an example, for a married filing jointly couple in 2015, they can have taxable income up to $74,900 and stay within that 15% marginal tax bracket, which I would argue is probably the lowest tax rate that those monies will ever come out of those retirement accounts. So what we'll try and do is try and get a slow and steady income stream out of those retirement accounts.
I got you.
To have that money come out at the lowest possible tax rate.
You know what you're telling me? By the way, this is Gary Pussy, folks, and I love this because he is a certified financial planner. And by the way, that's important. We'll talk about why you want to find certified folks to work for you. But when we come back, we'll talk about the importance of having somebody that's a professional to help you as well and what the level of entry might be. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And my guest is financial planner Gary Plessy, who is the author, co-author of the book on retirement, Are You Ready for the Second Half of Your Financial Life? And we're talking about, how you should structure your financial pots for retirement, one that's in a retirement fund, one that may be in a non-retirement, but that you can get to. And even then, though, if I understand you right, Gary, both of these require a certain amount of planning to make sure that you handle the tax aspects of this and also the money that you're going to need for the rest of your life.
Yep, that is correct.
I don't know what the level of, I've got a few dollars. I mean, I'm not rich and I've saved, but I'm kind of confused with all the stuff. But I don't know whether I'm at the level that a financial planner thinks it's worth their time to work with me, or that I should even call, or I don't know how much it's going to cost. How does this work? Tell us from your perspective, what level are you willing to accept somebody, and how much is it going to cost them to say, okay, I want your professional help here because I want to do this right?
Well, here's what I answer that, Paul. When I look at, say, like a level of assets that has it, makes sense, if you're, for us, we really don't have any kind of hard and fast minimum. Really what we'll do is we'll meet with people and say, okay, if we can figure out a way to help them, we're going to look to help them. I can't speak for all advisors, but I know the way that we set things up, we try and really, we get paid from the investments, and a lot of advisors do work that way, where a lot of times, they're getting paid from, say, internal costs of investments.
Mm-hmm.
And those internal costs of those investments are really the same no matter where you buy those investments.
Okay.
A mutual fund is probably the easiest example. What I always try and encourage people to do is you definitely want to make sure you have an advisor that has a certain level of expertise in multiple areas. Mm-hmm. And probably the biggest shortfall that we see when we talk to people, I meet with them the first time, is that from a tax side, they're either working with an advisor that either has no knowledge of income taxes whatsoever, ever, or there's absolutely zero communication between, say, their CPA and their investment advisor. And when we look at retirement planning, income taxes can have such a huge, huge impact
mm-hmm.
on it. And if there's not some attention paid to it, there's a whole host of opportunities that end up getting missed that just can't go back and get recovered.
Okay, so it makes sense to have someone who is professional. And by the way, I pointed out the certified. I think the fact that certification is important as well. I mean, anybody can call themselves a financial planner, but everybody can't be certified unless they are, in fact, trained properly. Is that true?
That is 100% correct. And in our group, as well as being a certified financial planner, also a certified public accountant, a CPA, which really helps to leverage the tax side of things for our clients. Now, not every advisor is going to have both those designations. If you have one and can find that, hey, great, it helps. But if it doesn't exist, you definitely want to make sure there's a very open line of communications between, say, your certified financial planner and your certified public accountant to make sure those tax opportunities do not get missed.
Folks, this is so important. My guest is Gary Plessy, who is a certified financial planner, certified public accountant. I can't tell you how many times I get contacted by somebody who said, well, he was a financial planner. And I said, well, was he certified? Did you check? Or he was a CPA and did you check? And I had my you have to make sure that the people that are handling your money are professional people certified who are looking out for you. If you don't, you're going to get burned very often. And there's no coming back from that. Gary, the book, which is available where, and then what do you want people to get from the book on retirement, as it's titled, Are You Ready for the Second Half of Your Financial Life? What is it that you want people to get from this book?
Well, first, the book can be found on the website, bookonretirement.com. It's also available on amazon.com, as well as our company website, houserandplessel.com. But when we really wrote the book, I mean, really what it came down to, for years, well, probably both when my business partner Kevin and I first got in the business, everybody drilled into our heads, say, hey, you got to find a niche. You got to find a niche for a group of people that you can help. And when we first started to focus on retirees, a lot of the geniuses that be at that point said, well, that's too broad of a group. They don't have specific enough needs. Well, we could not have disagreed more.
Retirees
have very specific needs. And when we started to kind of build our practice, you know, 20-plus years ago at this point, it became very clear that a lot of people would try and carry over those same strategies that they used in the first half, the savings and accumulation phase of their lives, into the second half of their lives. And the reality is that just doesn't work. So when we put the book together, we wanted to just try and make it very clear to say the game does, in fact, change. When you get into retirement, you get close to retirement, it absolutely 100% changes because you no longer have that income stream from working. So you need to generate some cash flow from your investments. You need to make sure you get that money out of those retirement accounts as tax efficiently as you possibly can. And even going forward to really the end game, to make sure that things are set up to pass on to, you know, to your heirs and those that you love in the most tax-efficient way as possible as well.
It, simply put, Gary, and before we break for here, is that this is important for you to understand, and that's what you guys with the book saying, look, don't just brush this off. It'll be okay. It won't be okay unless you make it okay, right?
That is 100% correct. And probably the thing we found, it's not rocket science. I mean, really what we have in here, there's some very simple strategies that are very easy to understand, and they're just things that a lot of people don't think about, a lot of advisors don't think about. And once it's brought to light, it's real simple to take a couple of very easy steps to put some of these strategies in place.
That's why you go to the professionals, folks. That's why you go to people like Gary Plessy. You need certified folks to help you out, and it pays dividends big time. When we come back, we're going to talk about another of your real budget problems. That's underestimating how much it's really going to cost you to live. Gary will take you through that. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry. Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. My guest is Gary Plessy. He is the co-author of the book, a new book called It is the book on retirement. Are you ready for the second half of your financial life? And one of the points that Gary makes in the book, and I think it's so important, is this. You underestimate your real budget and what you are going to spend in your retirement. That is a big, big problem, isn't it?
It's a huge problem. I think that there's very few things in life that we say are certain, but one thing that we found is certain, whatever you think you're going to need for retirement income, you're actually going to need more. Things are going to pop up whether it's a roof on the house, a water heater going. Actually, one of the big things that we see with a lot of our clients is dental expenses. A lot of retirees, the health insurance issue is a whole separate thing, but a lot of them don't have any type of dental insurance. So now all of a sudden, something goes wrong, they need an extra $3,000, $5,000. You know, those types of things always tend to pop up.
Yeah, well, maybe so, Gary, but come on. The truth is that the market always goes up. So I've got...
if we can guarantee that, I'd be out of a job.
It's so true. It doesn't happen that way, does it?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. The challenge is, and it's funny, we actually refer to this in our book, actually, in Chapter 2. It's fairly confident that at some point in time during everyone's retirement, the market will have a downturn. But the real key to success is, depending on what strategy you're following, is when that downturn happens. If that downturn happens early on in retirement, that can completely change your scenario,
yeah,
as opposed to that downturn happening, say, later on in retirement.
Right.
And I think when you get into retirement, you want to make sure you have that solid income and distribution strategy set up so that you know you're going to be okay just in case that market downturn does happen early on in retirement, because that's just something we just don't know.
And what about those who've not properly planned? Is it they're 62, 65, 70, they just simply haven't done it. They're still working a little bit, or maybe not at all. Is there anything that they can do to kind of get their life straightened out, their financial life straightened out?
It's very hard if there's been no savings until late in the game. So obviously the strongest encouragement we always tell people, a lot of times we work mostly with retirees, but when we talk to their kids and their grandkids, is, you know, save early and save often. When you get to a spot where you're kind of later on in the game, getting closer to retirement, you want to slow down and you just haven't done a lot of the savings, it's obviously trying to make up for lost time and put as much away as you possibly can is really the best strategy. Or maybe start to look at maybe some working part-time strategies. We know a couple of people in the area here that focus on reverse mortgages to help people get some equity out of their homes for a retirement income stream. So there's a couple of different options, but really the best thing is just to save early and save often.
Okay, and you touched on it, and I don't want to go too deep on that, but that reverse mortgage aspect, is that something you recommend, or is it based on a person to person, I mean, each individual situation?
It's really going to be individual specific, and I'll be very clear with you. First of all, it's something that we don't do. It's not something we're licensed to do. But we do know some people that do that. And I'll be very clear with you, probably 10 years ago, I really didn't like the idea at all. But as I've come to learn a lot more about it, it really can be a very good viable strategy for the right scenario and the right situation.
All right, well, here's the last one I got. Okay, look, listen, Gary, it's good, but I got a huge principle there. I mean, I saved a lot of money, and I can just draw down on that principle and kind of use it as income, right?
Right. That's ideal world. That's the way you want to do it. when we look at retirement planning, we kind of try and break it down into a couple different buckets, because a lot of times we'll see somebody that says, let's pick $1 million just to pick a dollar amount,
right.
And let's say somebody's drawing $50,000 a year off of that $1 million to keep the numbers round. The problem is, if the market doesn't cooperate, now all of a sudden we have another 2008 and that million drops to 500. Well, now it's to maintain that $50,000 a year income stream. Well, now you're drawing 10% of your assets. Very clearly, unless the market recovers very, very quickly, you're going to be circling the drain very, very fast.
Amazing. Just amazing, folks. So look, all of the ideas that you have, you're not sure about, that's why we send you over to people like Gary or to folks that do what he does. And I encourage him to get the book. Where can the book be found again?
It can be found on our book website, bookonretirement.com. It's also available on amazon.com, as well as our company website, Hauser and Plessel.com.
All righty. Well, listen, would you please tell your co-author, Kevin Hauser, that he missed a great time? Would you do that, Gary?
I absolutely will.
Thanks for writing the book. Thanks for being with us. Come back and see us soon, will you please?
Appreciate it, Paul.
Okay, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much. Okay, the book on retirement, and this is the show on Finances Yours. We're here every week, same time, same place. Hope you'll join us. It's all about making you a more educated consumer, a smarter consumer. We'll see you next week. We'll be here, will you? I hope so. Bye now.